Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 446, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I am your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Brad Torrey from TTCS Computer Services. How you doing again, Brad?
Doing great. How's it going up there, Jeff?
It's going really good. It's a little chilly, but other than that, it's going great. I enjoy this type of time of year with the fall. I can open my window. My office is not as hot as it is in the summertime, so it makes it kind of nice.
Yeah, same here. We had kind of a long, hot summer, even for Southern California, so the fall is definitely welcome and coming.
Yeah, the fall as it is. So what's like the lowest temperatures you guys get out there?
Well, in the coldest wintertime, yes. It gets down to, at night, just to get to the very coldest temperature. I'm trying to think on, I'm sure it's gotten down into the high 30s at some point in my life, but
wow.
if it gets below 40, that's pretty extreme here. So
California extreme weather.
Yeah.
Oh.
We had hail once in my life. Otherwise,
wow.
Yeah, we complain about it being so cold, but it's also that we don't have, like, it's not cold, so we don't have the kind of insulation that people have in other places, and you can't even really buy, like, warm clothes, really. Like, just a standard pair of jeans doesn't really do much for you when it's 40 degrees, but that's about the warmest piece of, pants you can find. So,
okay.
So it feels colder than it is, I think, because we don't even know how to bundle up. We don't know what we're doing. And by the time we try to, like, figure it out, it's warm again and we don't care.
I guess that's a good problem to have. So anyways, going back to the show, what types of things did you want to talk about today as far as the computer repair business and what you're doing and things that are working for you?
I just kind of have, I use Wunderlist and for just a lot of things, but I keep a little podcast topics list and I just kind of throw stuff in there as I think of it. So I'm just kind of
nice.
Going to go through some of the stuff that I've thought of, and we'll go for a little while, and I'll probably have some stuff left over that we'll talk about some other time.
Okay, sounds good. Wunderlist is it's a good list maker. You can use Wunderlist on your Android phone. I don't know, does it work on an iPhone or?
I think it's cross-platform. Originated on the iPhone.
Okay,
but yeah, it's very cross-platform, and I use it on. It has a really good web interface too. So if you want to sit down and really get into it with a keyboard and a mouse, you can. But it's great on the go. It's a good platform, and you can share lists with other people. So my assistant has we have a couple of shared lists, and it's a good way to kind of communicate tasks. So, recommend it. It's free.
Yep, exactly. You can't beat free.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, it's a great list tool. I use OneNote myself. Does a lot of the same. Well, it keeps everything in a colorful notebook pattern of where I keep all my notes depending on the subject. So it's literally like having a notebook with different tabs in there that I can put whatever I want on there. So that works out pretty good. But far as for notes, like quick notes, I use Keep because it's right there on my phone. It opens up easily. And it's so far, because I've used Wunderlist before, so far it's the simplest one for just taking a quick dictation note or typing something in real quick.
Yeah. Keep's a good note keeper. I use Evernote just because it's something I've built up over the years and I like it, but
Evernote's good. It's very robust. I just couldn't get the granularity out of it, I guess, that I wanted. Either that or I guess my mind just didn't see it in a certain light. So to me it was very confusing. Not very confusing. I guess I just couldn't put my notes the way I wanted them. I'm a color tab kind of guy. Just to say.
Yeah.
So
you know what? I remember one last thing about Note maps that wasn't even on my list to talk about. But OneNote, I'm sure it still does this. I haven't used it in years. But when I had a corporate job, and we would have all these like meetings with the group meetings, and we'd discuss important things, and we were supposed to walk away with actionable things to do. I'd put the laptop in the middle of the table and turn on OneNote. Has audio recording, and you can take notes in the note you have like the text notes you're typing in, but it's recording the audio, and it has a built-in like timeline feature. So when you typed in a note, it lines it up with what was being recorded at the time. So if you wanted to like be like, oh, I don't remember what I wrote to myself, this note, I don't remember what I was trying to say, you can just like hit the audio that was playing right then, and you can kind of listen back to the meeting. It actually saved my butt a bunch of times.
Oh, nice.
So okay. That's actually, I don't know if anyone has used for that, but it's a neat feature. I haven't used it in years, but, and that's a Microsoft product. Here's a good segue into, I was listening to Windows Weekly right before this recording, and I heard, we talked about the Windows 10 pop-up on the business, the live show.
Right.
A couple of weeks back. Apparently Microsoft has announced new plans to make that Windows 10 update even more aggressive than it's ever been, coming up soon. So like if you have Windows updates, you're on Windows 7 or 8, and you have updates turned on where you have the box checked to get recommended updates the same way you get critical updates, then you'll get Windows 10. You'll still have to click install, but it'll download it and have it all prepped and ready, and you probably will be really easily tricked into clicking it and installing it. That's coming soon.
Yes, my understanding is spring of next year, sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. So you made a good recommendation during that show that I was already using Ninja, just kind of getting started with the demo, and Ninja RMM. I have both, actually, Ninja RMM and F-Secure will manage updates, and I've talked to both engineers and on both teams, and they say they don't conflict, and I haven't seen any problems with them.
Okay.
So in both systems, I have the Windows 10 update blocked.
Gotcha.
So, and since I've done that, I haven't seen it come back.
Yeah, I changed the policy settings to where it wouldn't. Now, right now, because Windows 10 is in optional, when it goes to the recommended side, then I will have to redo the policies on that system. But right now, the way I have it set up is that recommended updates still have to be okayed by me. They're not, if they're not critical, what I'm doing is I'm adding them to the policy as I see them for things that I know that have not broken any residential computers. Now, I will have separate policies set up for the business side. But as far as for residential side, I just make sure that things I've seen will work on the machine. Either I've seen them work on my machines fine, or I've seen them work on other machines fine. And then what I'll do is, what's nice in Ninja is you can add them to your policy on the fly. Mm-hmm. And so that anybody else that gets that download or that update, it'll automatically, as long as they're on that same policy, it'll download an update for them. So I don't have to worry about that in the future. So it does take a little setting up. But so when we get to the recommended, where Windows 10 goes in the recommended updates, I think I will have to redo the policy again. But again, like I said, the only thing I have it automatically doing at this point is critical. Everything else has got to be okayed by me.
Yeah, and I think just because I got so burned with the Windows 10 updater that I was okay with, I'm even a little bit more manual with it. I tell Ninja, ask me about every single update. And I thought that was going to drive me crazy, but like you said, if you could just go to one computer that has this list of updates that it needs approval, and you approve them for the policy, and then all the computers get it and it's okay. Yep. And if it's something that's like a specific driver update for, or that may only apply to that computer, you can just approve it for this computer and stuff like that. So,
correct. Yes.
It's a cool system. I'm digging it. So
I like it. I like the way it looks. I like how it functions. I'm probably still not using it to the degree that I could be, but it's a learning experience for me right now.
Yeah, me too. But I keep an open dialogue with my contact over there, and we just kind of go through and build build my knowledge of it over time. And they're still building a lot of features. I mean, I think what's good about what they've done is that the stuff that they have works. It's missing features that other RMM tools have.
Right.
But some of those other RMM tools are harder to use, and sometimes the features that they have don't work. So,
right.
so what I like about what they've done is made something that works, and then they're going to build on that.
Because you really want to have something that you're not creating another job for yourself. You want something that you can basically look at, figure out whether it's going to be good for a certain group, and push that policy out for that group. And I think that's what kind of makes it nice and kind of sets it apart a little bit, because there's a lot of things that these systems do that, do we really need to have them do that? You know, all the things that they do. So I don't know. I'm a little more simplified. Even when you're dealing with businesses, I just want a quick way that I can assess if things are going wrong or if things are not being taken care of on a regular basis. I don't want to sit there and babysit them. That's why I quite honestly, I laugh at a lot of businesses who go, yeah, I'm going to be right there within an hour when you call. Well, you can only do that with so many customers, and then somebody has to go down to the B list. And then somebody else has to go down to the C list. And that's just the way it, that's the way business is. Unless you go, I'm only going to deal with five customers. I'm going to have five business customers, and they're going to, no matter what goes on in my business, I'm going to be able to take care of them. Well, I don't know any company that can do that on a regular basis. So same thing with the RMM tools. I don't know anybody that can afford to have somebody just sitting there monitoring that stuff on a regular basis. And why should you? To be honest.
No, that's what it's for, is to make, automate or at least centralize all those tasks and save you time. You and I both I've just from listening, we're cautious about adding something to our business that is going to create more stuff for us to manage.
Right.
It's got to make sense.
Exactly. I don't need another job. We don't need another job, right?
Right. I mean, just on Friday, it was the weirdest thing. Two completely different companies with, they coincidentally have the same, I don't think it's the exact same model, but they both have a very similar model of Konica, you know, Minolta, large multifunction network printer, scanner, copier. And almost at the same time, I got a call from both of them that the scanning wasn't working, and they, you know, the it had lost network connection. It was just weird. And nothing more of that was just an interesting thing that they're both customers that I have, you know, I usually respond pretty quickly to them. I can get to them within an hour or less. But I had to pick which one was I going to help
first. Exactly. There's only one of you. There's not many of you. And so even if you hire somebody, the reality is there's a point where all these businesses and things get out of control to where you can't hire enough people to cover these things where you're always the person that's always there and ready to go with, you know, at a moment's notice.
Yep.
So
luckily the issues were completely different. One of them, as soon as I finish up with this show, I'm gonna drive over to their office and make sure that their printer's online. But the other one was just that for some reason Windows forgot the network password, so the printer was actually working fine, but they couldn't access the scans folder on the network. So that was a remote fix, and that was easy to do.
Let me ask you this, Brad: how many times do you think, I know to a business owner, everything absolutely seems like an emergency. But if you had to put a percentage on it, how many things are legitimately an emergency for a business for what you do on a regular basis? I mean, how many percentage of time?
That's a good question. And yes, everything is an absolute critical. we're going to go out of business if this doesn't get fixed in the next 5 minutes.
Right. Which is baloney.
Right.
But
like we talked about a while ago, or, you know, last week, I think, the QuickBooks was down for 2 days for this one attorney's office.
Right.
And that's a big deal. You know, they have open invoices with customers, and they create new ones, and they rely on it very heavily. But they didn't go out of business when their QuickBooks was down for 2 days. You know, yeah, I was uncomfortable, and yeah, they had some backlog to catch up on, but it didn't like destroy them. They did survive.
Right.
So, but that, you know, but then there's a good fair, a company that uses income tax preparation software during the tax season. They're going to have a really hard time doing their day-to-day, you know, customers walk in the door with an appointment time and they want their taxes prepared. And if their computer is, you know, if that software is not working for whatever reason, that's a problem. They are going to lose money. So I don't know. It's probably 50-50 where their emergencies are legitimate. And I'm pretty good at helping them find an alternative while we solve the problem to buy me some time.
Well, I guess that's my point. If it is a true emergency, what would stop a company from spending, let's just say, $1,000 a month and have a server that is backed up and is also can spin up a virtual server with a database and everything with a mirror image included, ready to go in 5 to 10 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, to me, that's what I mean by when you're not willing to pay for certain things, it almost seems to me like you're, on one hand, you're saying this isn't a real an emergency. I'm going to lose thousands of dollars a minute or an hour. But the reality is, but you're not willing to pay $1,000 a month in order to have the ability to be back up and running in a few short minutes.
Yeah.
So what?
And go ahead.
It's just one of those things where I look at these people and I go, okay, either you're schizophrenic and you don't know, or you had a personality disorder or something, or you can't figure out whatever you're going to do, but you can't have it every way you want it. You're either going to spend money and have that redundancy, or you're not going to spend money and you're going to deal with the pain if and when your system goes down.
Yeah. And I'm feeling over the years that I've had the same companies that I work with, that actually the panic calls where they try to convince me that it's an emergency and that I have to drop everything to help them have probably gone down. And I think it's because I don't say, well, if this really was an emergency, when we talked about this other system and I asked you to spend this money on this, you would have done it. I don't say it at the time.
Right.
But afterwards, they want to talk about why this happened and how we can prevent it. And then I say, absolutely, I think we should talk about that. And I present them with an idea and a solution that'll give them that kind of, you know, instant some kind of resolution to the problem. And they say, oh, yeah, that's not in our budget. It wasn't that big of a deal. And after having enough of those conversations with the same people over and over again, they sort of realize that if they tell me it's an emergency, I'm going to come to them with a bill and say, look, this is how we solve this problem. And they know they're not going to pay it because it's not that big of a problem.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think they kind of learn over time. They're like, yes, okay, it's a problem because I don't want to spend the money to solve the problem. And it's not Brad's fault.
Right, exactly. And that's the ultimate outcome that you want. You want to do the best for that business. But the reality is you can only give them the information you have. And it's their choice of whether they take it and do something with it, or if they just go, no, you know, it's not in our budget. But the latte is from Starbucks somehow is in your budget. So, it's this balancing act that I know you can't come out to the customer and say, hey, by the way, you know, stop bringing in the brownies and the lattes, and you guys could probably afford some of this stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But then again, there's the customer. I'm actually working on a little prop, you know, setup for him right now. He wasn't happy with a certain way that his backup was working, just because of like he has two NASs in his office. One is a Synology and it's the primary one, and then one's just a little, I don't even remember. I think it's a D-Link. It's a very simple NAS, and it's just like a redundant, you know, daily backup over to that one in case something happens.
Okay.
And he's always told me, I tell this, you know, the guy it's next to his desk, if there's a fire or whatever, first thing you do is grab that box and run out the door. And like, that's an interesting, disaster recovery plan. So the problem with it is that it doesn't encrypt. It doesn't have any kind of user controls that I could find anyway.
Okay.
And so when we back up the important, like, sensitive stuff, it's all there. And anybody can get to it. So he didn't like that. I don't like it either. He's going to pay for the he decided to go all out, and he's going to spend the money to buy a completely duplicate NAS that he, like the Synology version, overkill for a secondary NAS, but it's going to go to his house, and we're going to do the device to device. Like, I think we'll probably use rsync. And so every day the NAS in the office will replicate over to the one at his house. And if that one goes down, in the office, well, his house is only a 5-minute drive from the office. So he can drive over there, grab it, bring it into the office, and then at least, you know, they'll maybe lose half a day or something, but they'll be up and running in minutes instead of having to figure something out that'll probably take days.
Right.
So
that's good.
And he's into it. And that was his, I mean, I suggested it because I suggest it to everybody to do things like, you know, the right way, but he's going to spend the extra grand just in case, because he doesn't want his office down.
Exactly. And that's when you know it's important to the customer. So yep. Very good. All right. So what else is on your list today?
So usually, especially in the corporate world but in you know, on a broadcast or whatever, you want to project this positivity and everything's great. But I think it's kind of important to talk about when things aren't great. And what you do to kind of deal with it. And so I'll just kind of say, like, not to bum anybody out or for sympathy or whatever, but like, I'm exhausted right now.
I feel your pain. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you.
I know. No, and I know everybody, and especially if they're running a small business, they get, you know, they'll recognize this feeling. Like, it's been a kind of a hard month, and you know, I've got my regular customers and I've had projects and we're, you know, we're all right, but money's a little tight right now. And, you know, it's been a grind this month and I am so worn out and I just kind of don't want to get up in the morning.
Mm.
And so recognizing that feeling and knowing that if I just lay around and hopefully it'll pass, I'll probably just go out of business because I won't right. do anything with it. And I don't want to go get a job. I start thinking about going to get a job and I start getting like hives. Like, I do not want to go get a job. I love this business. And so I want to make it work. And so, you know, one of the things that I've been talking about on different shows, really building and trying to clean up, set up some more infrastructure, get some more processes cleaned up, just sort of working on my business like you're supposed to do, because right now I'm not working for the business because I don't have a lot of projects. But it's been good. Like, I feel more streamlined. Like, if something comes up, I know what I'm going to do.
Right.
So that's good. And then another thing is I've just been trying to, like, take care of myself a little bit better, eating better, and I started running again. I've been spending, you know, a lot of times I've got friends that'll say, hey, come on over and let's hang out. And I'm like, oh, I got this project and a deadline or whatever. I'm like, no, you know what? I'm going to go see my friends. And, you know, I always make time for family. I've never really compromised on that. So
right.
I'm still just making time for family and hanging out with my kids and stuff. But yeah, so I feel better about this sort of, you know, downer feeling because I'm going out and trying to just do stuff, running and seeing friends and being productive in spite of, you know, not really having as much work as I'd like to be doing. So
I'll tell you, that's great for you to be open and honest like that, because I think a lot of us go through that at different stages, you know, either throughout the year or the years that you're doing this business or doing things or just living life. This could be a life lesson, period. I think a lot of people will discount what exercise, let's just take that for an example, can do for you. It releases, you know, endorphins and different things in your body that will make you feel better, give you more energy. And just give you an overall better clarity a lot of times than just sitting around and just going through the daily grind. One of the things I try to do, even with all the stuff I have going on, first thing when I wake up in the morning is at 8 o'clock, I'm downstairs and I'm doing my half hour workout. P90X3, whatever, it doesn't matter what you use. Use what you like, whatever's going to work for you. It gets the blood flowing. It's a 30 minutes of a burn that after I get done, I mean, I don't like doing it every day, to be perfectly honest, but it makes me feel good after I get done. I go get a shower after that, and I'm ready to kind of tackle the day, handle the projects I got to handle, get ready for my work, whatever I've got to do, get things done with the family. So I think a lot of us, because of the types of jobs we have, we don't really think about that. And when you're busy and you're just boom, 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 all of a sudden you get to this low point and it's almost like you don't know how to deal with it. And so I think that's one of the things that you can do is take care of yourself. Eating is another great one you talked about. Eating can really change your mood in a lot of things. And I'm still, I try to eat good, but it's hard, man. I love chocolate.
No, dark chocolate's good for you.
Oh, man. Whatever. Not in the amounts I eat it, but I often joke. I said, yeah, the reason I work out is so I can eat all the junk that I eat and I get away with it. But it's one of those things that it's good to recognize that. And also the other key thing that you're doing is you're working inside your business. You're getting stuff done that needs to be done. So when you have that influx of business again, you're not sitting there running around like a one-legged man in a fanny kicking contest. You're able to handle what's coming at you and you feel better, but you go, man, I put some good processes in place and we're able to make this work a lot better. And I'm able to actually handle more. So I'm not as overwhelmed.
So, right.
That's good.
And then another thing that I've been doing, and this isn't just to make, you know, this is just because it came up and I have time to deal with it right now. My daughter is starting as a freshman. And so our school has a culinary arts program. It's a 4-year program. And
ooh, nice.
Yeah. And it's a competition team. It's amazing. And they're the national champions 2 years running.
Nice.
So she's getting involved with some, you know, if she still continues to like it and sticks with it for 4 years, she's going to get exposed to some really, just something that I don't, even on any program level, I don't see at the high school level getting, sports like football, if you've got a good football program, it's like that. But this is a career training that I don't see high schools doing in any level. So it's pretty fantastic. But so they have a foundation because it's an expensive program and they need to raise money and they don't want to charge the kids money to participate. Plus, they need to rebuild their facility. They've basically accomplished everything they have in a 1970s home ec classroom that they've sort of like upgraded to a degree to be, you know, a modern kitchen. They still have the old ranges and the old ovens and a lot of the old equipment. And so what they want to do is tear down and rebuild and build a like classroom commercial kitchen like you'd find if you went to the Art Institute or Le Cordon Bleu or something. So I joined the foundation and they're pretty good at doing the fundraisers that maintain their costs, but the state just cut their funding, so they have to raise more money. And then on top of that, they want to raise $1 million for this facility. I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I don't ever really done fundraising in that kind of sense, but I do have a lot of restaurant contacts from my years working in the restaurant industry. And plus they obviously don't, you know, as soon as they found out that I was an IT guy, they just started drooling. So I'm taking over their website and helping them with processes and just kind of doing, I'm devoting a fair amount of time to helping them out and building up their fundraisers. And it's been really, it's new, so I can't say it's been rewarding yet, but it feels good, and it'll help out this program that's from the high school that I graduated from, and so I'm kind of giving back to the community, and also advising them as kind of like their IT director. So, you know, maybe I'll get some referral business out of it as well, but mostly I'm just doing it because I want my daughter to have that. I want that $1 million facility before she graduates.
Right. No, that's awesome. So, that's really cool.
So, we're putting them on, to go back to like computer related stuff, we're putting them on Google Apps for nonprofit, because they are a, registered nonprofit organization. And so that's free. Because they don't have any real official channels of communication. If you wanted to email or talk to the president or the treasurer, you just kind of have to know who that is. But we want, because it's parent founded, you know, parent volunteers, they automatically rotate every 4 years. So we want, I want them to have like president at NewportCulinary.com as like, that's who you email. And so when somebody new comes along, the email address is the same, and you know, they have been doing stuff for the past couple of years, but they don't store it anywhere. So like, hey, where's that program or that flyer, the description of the things that you did last year? I don't know. So I want them to start storing stuff into Google Drive, you know, within this kind of enterprise class solution that Google Apps is, and doing that and just kind of helping them with the organization. It's been fun, and also, you know, I get to kind of tackle some different challenges. Usually when you're setting up a work email system, that's their primary email, but all these people have regular day jobs, and I have to probably I'm going to find out on Tuesday when we have our meeting, I'm probably going to have to case by case basis for each of them consult on how they're going to check and send email, because if they're already using Gmail, do they want another tab on their browser? Like I do. I mean, I have three different Gmail tabs open, and for each of the different accounts that I have, one's my personal, one's my personal business, and one is for an organization that I am their IT director. So I have, you know, I'm only within that organization when I'm dealing with them. That works for me, but that won't work for everybody. Some people are going to want it to come into their normal inbox. Some people aren't using Gmail at all, so it's going to have to go to like whatever they're doing. So that'll be an interesting challenge to tackle. It's helping people check this secondary email account without losing messages and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I almost wonder if it's better to keep that stuff separated versus having everything come into one inbox. And I guess it would depend on how much email a person is getting. I use Outlook because I have 7 email addresses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes, 7. 7 email addresses in there. So they're all separated for the different shows, the different businesses, and my personal stuff. What's nice is it doesn't matter who sends me anything on any of those email addresses. If I want to push them back into the right email address, like if somebody sends me something to my personal, I can go down. When I reply back, I just change the email address automatically by clicking on it. And it's a drop-down menu. And I say, I want to send this to whatever they were contacting me about. Could be my business or whatever. And it will go back with that email address and signature line and all that kind of stuff. That's one of the reasons I like Outlook. There's no way that I could use Gmail in most of my Gmail accounts, whether it's Google Apps or just regular Gmail accounts. There's no way I could have 7 tabs open on my browser and go back and forth between them. That would just drive me nuts. But when you're only talking about 1 or 2, for some people, it seems like maybe it will be easier for them just to have it forward into whatever email they're already using. In that way, at the end of their term, you can forward it to the next person, whatever kind of they're doing.
Yeah. So it's going to, I know it's going to come down to just having to do it differently for everybody, depending on how they like it. And on the phone, it's so much easier. Like if you know what I mean? Like you just install the Gmail app and you have your different accounts, but it pops up with a notification. So you know, when you get email, that's the biggest fear, is that people are just going to drop. They're not going to see new emails.
Yes, that's true.
And that sort of thing, it actually is probably why having multiple tabs works well for me, because half the time I'll get the notification on my phone while I'm sitting at my desk, but I'll still go to the, you know, just look at it on my computer.
Here's the thing I can't understand is, so let's take the Gmail app on your phone, because it works just like, I can do the same things with that one. It works just like Outlook does. But why don't they have anything like that on the computer? You know what I mean?
Yeah, the left hand and the right hand are not talking. Because it's ideal. Both on iPad and on Android, it works perfectly.
Right. Yeah, so I don't understand why wouldn't you have
that.
One of the other reasons I started, we're going back to note-taking apps. One of the reasons I started using Keep is because I can have a shortcut that has Keep and a couple different other Google app programs in there, and I can keep Keep open on my desktop. So it's kind of my daily to-do list, which is kind of cool. And then when I add stuff in my phone, it changes there. If I add stuff on my desktop, it goes on my phone. I've got everything as far as quick notes, to-do lists, all that stuff in one place. They really need to do that with, and I'm surprised they haven't done it with Gmail at this point.
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason why not.
I mean, Gmail hasn't really, I don't know what's going on with them. They have like Inbox is a, you know, an offshoot of Gmail.
I still don't understand Inbox. Do you?
I tried it.
So did I a couple times.
You know what killed it? That, and I keep getting messages from this discussion board because I tried to register like a feature request, and now till the end of time, I'm going to keep getting, anytime anyone posts anything on that thread, I get a notice, but it's missing like a signature.
Yes.
I have my little logo and my name and, you know, the contact info I want in my signature, and I want that. I mean, email signatures, who would have thought that was like a feature that would never not exist? And they don't have it, and because they think, well, this is more of a community, like a thread, almost like a chat thing. I'm like, well, that's not what I use email for. So
right.
So I stopped using Inbox.
Now let me ask you this: so one of the reasons I use Outlook is because I like how they do their signatures, and I like how I can set my signatures up. Is it as easy to do with the Gmail online? I mean, with your logo and links and all that kind of stuff built in. Okay, you can do that. Because I just never have tried it.
Yeah, you just go into settings. And I think it's on the first just general options tab there. You scroll down a little ways, and then there's a spot where you can paste a signature that you like, or you can, you know, insert an image. And it even, you know, in kind of typical Google-ish fashion of the way they do pretty much everything, you can like just give it a URL link and it'll pull it in. And I mean, it's pretty easy to manage, and you can do, you can set up like a secondary signature for like vacation responder kind of thing. So yeah, it's pretty easy. It's not it's Outlook has a little bit more features with it, but I don't need those features, so I don't care. I mean, I think you can have more options as far as signatures go in Outlook.
Well, again, with seven different email addresses, I've got five signatures. So, yeah.
And you say, use this one whenever I'm using this address. Correct. Kind of thing.
And it just automatically, when I go to reply or when I go to send a new email from that address, and I can change it on the fly if I made a mistake or whatever. So it, from that standpoint, for me, it just works out better that way. But I would be interested. I've never been a big proponent of webmail. And I don't know why. I don't have anything against it, but I know a lot of people, they live in their webmail and they're perfectly fine with that.
I have two customers that use Outlook, and I like hate them for it.
I'm sorry.
No, I try not to like let my personal, you know, because it is a good, if they get productivity out of it, it's working for them.
Right.
You know, far be it from me to it's like me telling somebody they shouldn't use iPhones. It's not my place. Like, I can tell them what I like about Android or, you know, over iPhone, but, or like why I hate Outlook. You know, they like it. So I don't tell, but at the same time, then they have like issues that I have to figure out because I don't deal with Outlook. I live in Gmail. Priority inbox. That was the biggest thing when I had to use Outlook for a little while, and I'd been using priority inbox in Gmail.
Right.
And then I had to go back to just like the shotgun vomit of email that coming into my inbox. I'm like, what is all this stuff? I didn't even know I got all this crap. And it's not spam that gets filtered out. It's just stuff that I don't necessarily care about.
Or need to look at right at that point, right?
Yeah, like I still go down and scroll through it, and every once in a while I'll say, "Oh, yeah, that was interesting," but it wasn't the end of the world that I didn't see it. Like if it had passed by and I never saw it again, I wouldn't have lost anything from it, and it's really good. So the important flag is my best friend.
Gotcha. Now see that on my phone, that's the first thing I shut off. Because I can't. No, I want it all in the fire hose. And I don't subscribe to what I do love about Gmail. Gmail is by far the best spam filtering engine out there.
Totally agree.
From my other accounts, I get all kinds of spam. Now, not a whole bunch. It's not horrible. But for my Gmail accounts, I rarely ever get a spam that I actually see. Now, I know I'm getting spam, but it's hidden. I never see it. So the stuff I get is handfuls of stuff at a time that I've either asked for or I need on a regular basis. Maybe I'm getting information from a customer or something like that, notifications from my CRM or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Email. Like, you know, it's funny. We're sitting here talking about email, and email is so 1990s.
Oh, yeah. Right there with your BlackBerry.
Exactly. But, you know, I like to communicate with email because I can control it.
Yeah.
Now, text message, I hate having things clogging on my phone. So I'll get a text message. I'm either answering it right away or deleting it right away. Either one. Just depending on who it is. And you know, I do that on a regular basis. But email, I can always respond back to somebody, even if it takes me a few days.
Yeah. I set up when I first started working with my web designer and like, you know, admin assistant, we talked about communication, and I was like, look, I've never been able to get the world to agree with me, but since you and I are working together, we can agree on this. Like if something needs to be dealt with right now, text me or call me. Since that's probably only 10% of our communication or less, email me and don't expect an answer for 2 days. I might get immediately back to you sometimes, but if you send me an email, I like reserve the right to get back to you within 2 days.
Right.
And the same goes when I email you, I do not expect an immediate response. I expect you to get back to me when it's convenient and you can take the time to like properly answer it. But if I send you a text, please answer it right away.
Right.
And then we have that little chat. You know, those are the rules and they work great.
That's a great, not only that, email is great for keeping track of things you've talked about.
Yeah.
You have this page of information that says, hey, you know, this is what we're doing. Here's what we talked about. Even when you're communicating with customers. That's why I love sending out, using Repair Shopper, sending out emails through that as I'm working on a machine so that they get constant updates. And it gives me a log of what was actually done. When they send me a response back, what was approved, and all that kind of stuff. So it works out great as far as that goes. And I know a lot of businesses probably, their contracts per se for their businesses is email. For this amount of money, here's what we are going to do. No, we don't want that option. We want this option. Here's what we're willing to pay. So here's what you can do. So you've got that back and forth where you go, they go, well, why wasn't this taken care of? Well, you didn't want that option. Remember, we can go back in the emails and we can look. And and so they have an understanding of, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's almost like that contract inside your email. Without it being official.
Yes. And I was already kind of doing that, but when Matt Rainey was doing the Podnuts Pro, he sort of, I mean, I think that's what he said his policy was. We don't do official contracts because people tear them apart. It causes so many problems to like be in this agreement that they can sit there and now find the loopholes or right. Whatever. It's like, no, we just said an email, kind of a gentleman's handshake. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're not going to do. And that way it gives us all the kind of the leeway to like, okay, well, technically we didn't say we were going to do this, but we're going to do this because it makes sense to do this right now.
Sure.
And we're not bound by this official contract. So I like that. And then you get the record though, where you can still say, hey, look, I offered you this service and you said you didn't want it. So it's right here.
Yeah. So you're going to be down for 2 days. So suck it up. All right.
Yep.
I'm sorry. We can't talk to our customers like that, but sometimes I want to.
Yeah.
What do you mean I can't get? What do you mean I can't get those crypto viruses or crypto encrypted files back? Well, you can. Yeah. Just pay $1,000 and call it a day. Well, yeah. They're not that important. Okay, then why are you crying to me? Again, don't talk to your customer like that. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Everybody feels it. Oh, all right. What else you got on your list for today?
Let's see. I think I'll talk about that because we sort of like everyone that's listened to the show has probably listened to Matt Rainey at least once, and his stories are hilarious. And he can be really snarky when he's talking to people, and I don't believe that he exaggerates. I believe that's really how he talks to people.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Who you see Matt is, that is who Matt is all the time.
Yep. I truly believe that. And there are times when that's necessary. And I do, it's funny when I'm listening to him, how he's, especially like the QuickBooks backup story he told
me. Isn't that horrible?
I was sitting there going, oh, thank goodness I've never had to deal with that, because I would have been exactly like him. I would have been sarcastic. I probably would have been over the tops at one point at that much time going by. With no response. And I've totally done that. Like they'll say, oh, you'll get a call back at whatever time. And I'll be like, I completely don't believe what you're saying to me right now. I know that you believe what you're saying to me right now, but I know that you're lying, and you don't know that you're lying. You're not lying officially, like in the true sense of the word, but what you're saying to me isn't going to happen. And they'll be like, I need to talk to somebody right now.
Well, here's the problem. So here is why I tend to only use big name brand services. And for those that don't know, the story that was talked about in last week's Podnest Daily was a customer of Matt's was using QuickBooks backup to back up not only QuickBooks, but all their data on their computer. I can't remember exactly what did the data, something happened with the data. Anyways, they tried to get it back. They couldn't get it back. Long story short, go back and listen to last week's episode. But QuickBooks data backup, I would not in a million years. Now, I know customers do what they want, but I would not in a million years recommend that to anybody. Because the reality is the reason I sell or resell Carbonite is because Carbonite's a huge company. And I know that they have my back. Yeah, they went through a lot of pain over the last 5 years. I've had them for well over 5 years. I've gone through those pains with them. Their service hasn't been always the best service as far as quick backups and all that kind of stuff, but they've changed a lot of their policies now, and it works great. I check my files every couple weeks. Everything's there. I can pull stuff down. It's very easy to get to. I know if I have a problem, I can call them. They're going to have to deal with it. The reality is companies like QuickBooks are good at, and not even really that good at, building software to run your business. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But we don't really have a choice out there, so there's not too many to pick from. So you use what's available and what you can afford. So with that being said, I would never in a million years use their backup service, because they're not even really good at what they do initially. Right. Why would I think that they would be good at trying to do another service that may or may not work? Yeah.
That's a hard solution to come up with anyway. And they're not good at accounting software. I mean, they are, but not, you're right. Like exactly you're saying, there's so many times that you're just like, why does this suck? And why is this the only option? But
right.
But yeah, backup's not easy to do. There's a lot of stuff that they need to handle. A lot of engineering goes into it. And they're not, I wouldn't trust them either. And it sounds like that they really aren't a good choice, because the restoring doesn't work, and then they don't, they kind of go like, now what?
Right. They don't have a solution. So to them, here's their process. They think that 99% of the time, this works no problem when it does happen. But how many data failures does a company have, right? But the 1% that it does harm a customer, and then they don't have a solution in place.
Yeah.
They can't send you the information. It's on the servers. They don't know why you can't download it. Why do you have to pick one file at a time? We don't know. That's just the way it was set up. Well, change it. Nobody does it that way.
No, because that's insane.
Right. Or don't do it at all. I think is really the thing.
Yeah. But I think we started down that track because I was getting to the
being
point
snarky.
Of be, yeah, in general, I got to remind myself to be nice. I, especially in my current, you know, just kind of this funk that I'm in right now. I was checking my email, and I got this email from, I won't say the name of the company. You've never heard of them anyway, but,
okay.
But
that's fine.
I get this email, and it's like a new sales rep for the company. And she's reaching out to me, but she sends, and I've never heard of the company. I've never heard of this person. I didn't go looking for them. And I still, to this day, can't tell you what they do. She sent me like a 5-paragraph, like long, email about the services that they provide and the tiers that you can be, you know, like just a reseller or a partner or whatever. And it like goes on and on and on about how I can connect to her through LinkedIn and all the descriptions of the services all are buzzwords. It's all cloud. It's all productivity. It's all this or that and how I can make money with doing this. And I'm just going, this is the longest, the most amount of words someone I've ever seen use that never say anything. And I don't know who this person is anyway. And I go to their website because I'm like, maybe this is legitimate. Maybe they just aren't very good at describing what they do because it's complicated to describe. And I go to the website. It's the same thing. The whole thing is all just buzzwords. And it was and I was just in this state of mind where I was mad. Like, I am angry that you can't tell me what you do. And you got me to spend 15 minutes trying to figure it out.
Right.
And so I replied back in probably 4 sentences. And I wasn't overtly mean. And I wasn't throwing out curse words or anything.
Right.
But I was really blunt about how annoyed I was that she was unable to effectively communicate what they do and how their marketing department was unable to design a website that told me what they did. And yet she still felt it was worth like my time to send me this lengthy email. It was really rude. And I figured it was someone that I never wanted to, like, would never hear from again. And that I never would see, and that I'd never, you know, but whatever. I felt very disconnected from this person, and it wasn't ever going to be a problem to send this kind of rude email back. And I probably still won't do business with this company because I just don't think that it's the market that I'm in. So it's fine. But she replied back saying, hey, I was given this list by my manager to send emails to people that under the current partners that we've done business with in the past. So the recipient of this email was supposed to already know us and what we do. And I apologize for the mix up. But you were really rude to me. Please don't ever say, like, don't be like that. I'm like, oh, whoops. So then I felt bad because now it's a real person. And she wasn't trying to spam me. She was just trying to talk to people that they already work with and introduce herself. I felt bad. And then so I thought about how to reply to that for like an hour. I couldn't get it out of my head. And going back and forth, we figured out how my name got on the list. And it had to do with an old business partner that I don't deal with anymore. And we had a nice little back and forth, and we're probably going to have a phone call next week and figure it out. But it reminded me just like, you know what, if you don't need to take it up a notch because someone's just overtly not, you know, like when in some of those customer service situations where you need to get some results for something, it's okay to kind of take it up a notch and at least drop the white gloves. But no, I don't. Like, I got to remember, don't send that email. You can write it. I often write emails that I never send. Because I need to get that out, but I don't really want to send that to somebody.
So what's the rule of thumb? They say you write an email, wait 5 minutes to send it.
Yes.
Or wait an hour or something along those lines. And that's true. Because we do have to remember that there are real people on the other end. And maybe it was just a misunderstanding. Or they could have been doing something. But the reality is, no human being wants to be treated in that fashion. And a lot of times, because of this internet world, we forget sometimes that there are real human beings on the other end of that email, phone call, etc.
Yeah. And actually, now I've got a new tactic that I like a lot better. I was on a very, very, very frustrating support call with a vendor, the software vendor. And this is one of those times that when a business calls up and says, hey, we're down and this is a serious issue and we need it resolved immediately, it's legitimate. There's a customer sitting at their desk. They sell auto insurance. The program that they use to it's kind of a combination CRM, and it also interfaces with the insurance companies that they deal with.
Okay.
So it's how they deliver quotes, how they process payments, how they track, the VIN numbers on all, it's everything. It is the business in a package. And when it doesn't work, because every single month their update process is very poorly implemented, and it forces an update every month. It's a forced update. And even if I've got back and forth with the support rep, like over the past 2 years, trying to figure out how to make it not lock. It basically locks up on them.
Oh.
And I have to reboot the entire server because it won't let go of the process when you close the program. And I can't, like, even if I go directly to the process and stop it, it's like all this stuff. It's been years that I've been trying to solve this problem. And still today, every month, the program locks up and I have to do this whole process, and they're down because of the turnaround time. Like, usually by the time they've tried to mess with it, then they've called me, and then I've responded, and then I've rebooted, and then it's an hour. They're down for an hour. And usually with customers waiting. Oh. So people walk out the door, they're like, hey, this is going to take a while. Come back, or they do it on paper or something if they can. But anyway, so I have escalated that. I'm like, listen, you are, trying to help me and you're being very helpful, but you're also not helping me at all. So I'd like to talk to the person that I'm allowed to be really rude with, because it's not your fault. Like, I want to talk to your supervisor. but now since I've had that really awful conversation with the supervisor, I just talk to the, I say, so I've had conversations with your company in the past about this, and it's a really frustrating process. And I will admit that during that conversation, I went way over the top. That was unnecessary, and I don't think that got us anywhere. So let's try to resolve this another way, because the way that your company has prescribed to solve this problem isn't working. So let's work on a plan B. And so what I've subtly done is told them, this conversation can get real ugly real quick. But if we try to actually do what he's asking, it won't go that way. And so then they're usually much more like, go out of their way to be helpful. And actually, this last call, when I did that, I was super polite the whole time. I just kind of told them that I'd been rude in the past.
Okay.
I think we solved the problem. Not because of they did anything, but they gave me enough information that I was able to write a script, and now I've got a batch file that runs. That I believe we'll see on December 6th. I will know.
That's good to know.
So anyway, be nice.
Yeah, it is the best policy. Then you don't ever have to sheepishly go back and go, yeah, sorry, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Hey, we just broke the hour mark.
Do you have anything else on your list, or you want to save some stuff for later?
I will save some stuff for later. But I can do like a super quick couple of tools that I like.
Yeah, go for it.
I know I've mentioned it a couple times, but F-Secure, after a year of dipping my toe in the F-Secure waters, now we're all in, and I want to use it for everyone. I want everyone to use it.
Nice.
I've been very like very much like you. You know what? Microsoft Security Essentials is fine. Like, have a firewall and don't click on stupid stuff and have Microsoft Security Essentials and you're fine. Or at least you're probably as well off as if you had Norton or anything else.
Sure.
And I still sort of stand by that. But what I've found to be true of F-Secure is, first of all, the price point is roughly the same. It's $44 a year for the subscription.
Okay.
That's their like retail price. And they have discounts for multiple years and all that kind of stuff. They do such a good job. First of all, they still have dang near 100% on detection rates because they use a combination of heuristics and definitions. And I put them in on a client's computer, like in their office, where there's a guy that, I don't know why, but he always gets infected. And it's in an office.
Brad, you know why.
I guess. I mean, I know. There's so many different ways. I know.
Sorry.
In the year since I installed F-Secure, though, that computer has stayed clean.
Nice.
And then the other thing that they do that I think is still that wouldn't be enough to sell me on it. It's still just a good antivirus, and so is Microsoft Security Essentials. But what they have that sets them way over the top over anyone else is included for free in, you know, it's just part of the subscription. It's a complete Microsoft and third-party patch management tool.
Right.
And the cloud thing. Like, you have the dashboard, so you can go and quickly see the status of all the computers, and you can push certain updates that haven't gone out for some reason and set up policies, and you can turn on different aspects of firewall and all kinds of stuff, and it's all just part of the program. And so I definitely want to see them grow. Plus, they are working with Ninja. They don't have anything on the books right now, but I guess I talked to engineers on both ends, and they said that they've been working on for about a month now getting an integration. So you may be able to just deploy F-Secure through Ninja RMM at some point.
Nice. Okay. Good.
So that was the big one on my list. But otherwise, I've been playing with Tron. I don't know if you've heard of Tron.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I have not had a chance to use it. So tell us a little bit about it.
It's cool. I don't like they have a weird idea that in practice doesn't seem to be work. It doesn't work. But
okay.
Tron works. It's neat. I've used it. It takes a really long time though. But it's basically like a bundle of like batch files and programs that are sort of like community open source kind of driven. And they use BitTorrent sync to keep the program, like to send it, to distribute updates.
Okay.
So there's a community of people that maintain it. And if you have the BitTorrent, they give you the key to sync it with BitTorrent sync. So when they update it, it automatically just gets updated for you. And it's basically a batch script. You just run it with some, and they give you a list of different keys you can use with the, or different variables you can use when you launch it. And it just runs a bunch of stuff, and it'll reboot and kind of just let it go. It'll reboot into safe mode when it needs to, and it'll do it, like, it does everything. And when you're done, it's, the infections that I've tried it on, it cleaned them up. It does a good job. But what I don't like about this update process is that you can customize a few things, like a few scripts to get it to like email you notifications, and like you can just kind of set it up so that you can just run it the way you want it with the certain variables already kind of done. And but then that stuff gets overwritten when it syncs.
Oh.
When it updates. So you kind of have to like maintain your own little side file of it.
Okay.
And it's a little funky, but it's neat. I mean, it is a nice way to just kind of like set it and forget it. You know, it's going to take at least 4 hours. And when you come back, it'll be, you know, the computer should be cleaned up. So I do like it for that. I haven't seen it do anything wrong,
gotcha.
Like break anything. So it does a lot of Windows fixes. It's kind of like a way to do, I mean, I think D7 is, I haven't really used D7. I wish that I had, that I had spent more time with it, because it sounds like a really cool package. But plus, I really love that what is the developer of D7's name? He comes
Nick
on the
Shaw.
Post. Nick Shaw.
Yep.
He seems like a really great guy and doing a lot of the right things. So I really like this is prop, but this is like a free way to just kind of have something that's kind of like that.
Right. Yeah, I like the D7 too is a great, powerful tool. We were just talking about that today on the live show, and there's a lot of things that you still need to look at with your eyes manually when you're doing a virus removal. And I know a lot of people were questioning and say, well, to try to do a virus removal in an hour and a half seems like an awful short period of time when some of these scans can take an hour or more. And my response was, I don't run a lot of scans anymore. I just don't. I run Malwarebytes, which is 13 to 16 minutes on any machine, slow or not. And I guess it could probably take longer on a really, really slow machine. But all the ones mainstream for the last 5 years, they run fine on. TDSS killer is another one. And then just some of the things, I look into registry keys for certain things. I use auto runs to see if things are populating when they're killed, if they're coming back, if I see anything weird in there. They've got a lot of neat tools in there, but I still like to visually look at and see if I see anything that's off. And it only takes me like 5-10 minutes to be able to look through all that stuff. And then yeah. I'll run a couple scans to get rid of some of the ingrained, most of it's malware. Really, if you have a virus infection, you're going to know generally what type of virus it's going to be and how you need to handle that. And there's different tools for doing that out there. So, but you got to know what you're kind of looking for. But yeah, a lot of these other tools, Tron, UVK is another one John Dubinsky has talked about. He uses that, and sounds like a great program. Again, it's on my list to try these things. So I'm glad that you actually tried that and was able to see how it works. So that's very interesting.
Yeah. I'd use it again. I don't actually do a lot of virus cleanups.
Wait a minute. Are you a nuke and paver?
No. I don't have to deal with it. It's weird.
That's a good problem to have, really.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. I don't like doing virus cleanups. Why I wanted something that I could just kind of hit, like, Tron, go.
Yeah.
Go do it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And if you can come back with a clean system, you can check it out after it's done, even though it takes 4 hours. I mean, that is one way to, you know, what I said on the show today is that a lot of times it's not the malware removal or the virus cleanup that takes a while. It's the updates in fixing Windows if a piece of malware or something has corrupted something in the Windows system, whether it be a registry key or something like that. A lot of that stuff is where your time is spent in repairing those machines. So in some instances, it can take a long time. In others, it can be a very, very short period of time to get a machine cleaned up and back to operating order. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, very cool. A lot of good information, a lot of ranting. I think we had a good time ranting back and forth. Lesson for the day, be nice. And we'll go from there. So if people want to find out more about you or actually ask you a question, where can they find you?
Probably the easiest way, you can either email me or go through my website, and there's a contact form. And I think my phone number is listed on the website. It's brad@ttcscomputerservices.com or ttcscomputerservices.com. If you have any questions or comments, I'm actually in like a really chatty and helpful and generous mood right now. So if you want to ask me something, right now is a good time. So we do a lot of stuff with like VoIP. So I know we had a whole show on that. It'd be
right.
Cool if anyone wanted to get into that, I could kind of help them out, or if they had any issues that they've been dealing with. Because we've got that really, really smoothed out. I haven't had to deal with a VoIP problem in months.
Nice. Okay.
So I think that'll do it.
Very good. Well, Brad, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us today. It's been a blast. You guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallisch or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show like Brad was, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And for those of you that don't know, if you own a computer repair business or if you are a computer repair technician, you are allowed to email me and come on the show and share what you do. It's open to everyone. Not many shows do this type of format, but we do. So go ahead and contact me if you want to be on the show. I actually record these shows every Sunday night at 8 p.m. All you got to do is get on the calendar. It could be months ahead of time, and that would be fine. Everybody does their business a little bit differently, and we all can learn from everyone. So I also want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallisch. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.